Hello, happy Tuesday. Welcome. You're listening to Confetti. My name is Debbie Quain, and I will be your host for the next hour or so. I am cold. I'm so cold. Welcome. It's Tuesday, January 22nd, 2013, and you're listening to episode number 332 of Confetti, the Wedding Planning Business Talk Show. If you're passionate about planning weddings, especially for other people, you're in the right place, because that's what we talk about just about every week here on Confetti. And if you know of someone else who's in the same boat, please, please share this resource with them. To get live show schedules and updates and episode replays, please visit the website that goes with this show, and that's at confettiradio.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/confettiradio. And I invite you to be a part of our Facebook group, Confetti Insiders. You need to just, if you go ahead onto Facebook and look that up and just request to be a part of that, and I can okay that. Or if there's anyone who's already a member of Confetti Insiders, and I see several of you here tonight, of course you can invite someone and approve them all on your own without my input. If you need to get more information about planning weddings for a living, you can go on to weddingsforaliving.com, weddingsforaliving.com, and there you'll find free articles and other resources to help you be a successful wedding planner. If you want to make the move into starting your own wedding planning business, then check out weddingbusinessguide.com, and that has a lot more comprehensive information and resources, including downloadable forms, audio classes, video tutorials, and live classes, where we talk about the nuts and bolts of running a wedding planning business. And particularly if you'd like help with starting your wedding planning business on a part-time basis, because that's really the focus of that site. So check out weddingbusinessguide.com. Welcome to those of you who are joining live. I record the show live on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, assuming I haven't fallen in a manhole or such. So I invite you to join me if you're listening to the recording, if you can, at 8 p.m. Eastern. But no worries if you cannot, because each show is recorded and you can listen to the audio replay on confettiradio.com. If you're listening live, you're also watching the stream live, so you can see the video. But the video, I don't play back. Who on earth wants to see me sitting in front of a camera? So you can just listen to the audio at any point. Okay. And for those of you in the chat room, which you can find at confettilive.com, you can enter your URLs for however you like people to get in contact with you, whether that's Facebook or your Twitter handle, your Pinterest URL. What else? What am I missing? Your website? Did I say that already? However you'd like others to connect with you. Okay. And let's see who's here. Bianca, Precious, Michelle, Cynthia, A. Wheatley, and Angela, Jessica, Alpha, Prosper. I've got to move my screen over. Lisa, welcome. And I know many of you are also participating. You're watching and you're on the phone. So welcome. I'm so happy you're here. If you want to call in, you know, if for some reason you are not able to pick up the live stream via video, the number to call is 202-595-3511. And you'll notice that's a different telephone number than I usually give out. I'll repeat it. It's 202-595-3511. That number, you can listen to the live audio stream by pressing 1. But also, if you have some downtime or you want to listen to some archived episodes of Confetti, you can dial that number anytime, 24/7. And if you hit the number 2, you'll just get a rotation of some of the older episodes. So, you know, if you're on your cell phone, if you're, you know, just in between appointments and just want to listen, or plug the jack into your phone so that you can hear it in your car, or if you're on Bluetooth, you can you know, listen as you drive and just listen to some archived episodes. Okay? So that's 202-595-3511, and you can listen to that anytime. So save it in your contacts. I'll put the number in the chat. Thank you, Bianca, for asking, because I could do that, right? There you go. Okay, thank you, Angela. Thank you very much. Everyone's so helpful here. And if you are new, welcome. You'll see we're a friendly group. We don't bite, at least not today we don't. So introduce yourself in the chat room. Feel free to ask questions. Let's see. So for our last show, which we did last week, I answered two questions. It was formulated around those two questions. Someone wanted to know the best way to get started as a wedding planner. And then we had another person that had several different things going on with her wedding business and wanted to know how to market those. You know, should she market them all together? Should she market them individually? And one of the niches, one of the specialties that she, one of her specialty is marriage proposals. And it's so unique. And if you think about it, if you're offering a marriage proposal service, you know, so if someone's clueless or just doesn't have the time to make the arrangements, I'm sorry, I'm hitting the mic. I hope that's not making any noises. If someone doesn't have the time to set up the proposal as they want, they can hire you to do that. And that's really great. And the good thing about the marriage proposal, assuming the fiance says yes, is that when this person is ready to move forward with the wedding plans, more than likely they will come back to you. So it's a really great way to get in good with guys. Not saying that women don't do the proposals, but it's usually men I found that go through the hoopla. And isn't it hoopla now? There is so much hoopla, my word for the week, after catfish. when it comes to marriage proposals, it's just not a simple thing anymore. It's almost like it has to be done in public. People have to witness it, which isn't anything new, but there are dancing, there are people prancing, and it's recorded, then it goes, you know, viral on YouTube. Whoa. So a lot of things you can do if you're creative, and, you know, and it doesn't have to be someone who wants all of that. Again, it could just be someone who's, stuck for time and just needs your input. So really good service to promote to the guys. They get that. And anyone who is strapped for time. So think medical field, think people running their own business, you know, and some of the businesses you may not think about, you know, like some of the traditional businesses, plumber, mechanic, these guys are just stuck doing what they're doing all day long, and they want to propose to their fiance. They may not A, have the creative vision, or B, they may not just have the time. So you never know where that lead's going to come. And that's a real easy thing to promote. Others will enjoy promoting that service for you. Okay. All right. So for today, what I want, and we had some questions, but this is what I decided to do because I haven't done this for a while. I wanted to share with you how I plan my clients' weddings, because I go through a kind of step-by-step process, a system. And what that means is that each wedding kind of goes through the same sort of flow, although each wedding is different. But you may well know that I'm a firm believer in specializing, but I'm also a firm believer in creating systems rather than having to think about everything you have to do for each client. Well, if you create a system, then it becomes really easy. Much easier, I shouldn't say really easy, but much easier for each wedding that you plan. And what it also does is that when folks come on board to help you plan your weddings and work with you on your staff, there's a system for them to follow too. And I'm doing this with my hands, if you can see me on the camera. And it's because I have created a flow chart. And mine's really basic. And I was going to hold it up, but you really, it's just a 11x17. And I know you can't really see it on camera, but I just wanted to share with you the steps, and it's 25 steps, but it's not to show you, and the reason I'm sharing this is not to say to you, this is how you should plan a wedding. We all have our different ways of doing it, but whatever your way is, I would really suggest that you document that, you know, first do this and then do that, so that someone can follow you, but also so that it becomes systemized. I'm a firm believer of trying to create a business that's franchisable. Kind of, sort of, if that's a word, meaning that someone can come in and duplicate and do the same thing. Now, weddings, because they're so creative, you can't show everyone how to do that. It's not, the whole process isn't, you can't duplicate that because there's some creativity involved. And some of us are more creative than others. And some of us have the design gene and some of us don't. But the system should be the same. You always want to know what the next step is. That's really, really a good thing. So that's what I wanted to share with you. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure you can all hear me. Yeah. No one said that tonight. that they can't hear me. Mm-hmm. Good. Oh, gosh, someone said they couldn't. Oh, Precious said she, I spoke too soon. Is that me? Oh, yeah. You can't see me? If you cannot see me, poor you. Just refresh the screen. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm guessing you can, but I wanted to, hold on. Let me just type there. Just refresh the screen if you can't see me. And type that in. Oh, the one, and you know what? The audio, I spoke too soon. And Bianca's saying the audio went out. See, I'm getting that it, my stream is okay, but I will tell you, I've noticed that even though I'm paying Comcast extra for my high speed internet, my internet has been very much less than high speed. So I noticed that when I was setting up for the call, I could hear some static. So I apologize for that. You know, the number to call, that if that helps, I hope there's no static on that line, is 202-595-3511, okay? But just please know that I record every show and the recording is done locally, so it's almost always without any static. Nancy says she hates Comcast. I just don't want to say that, but I don't like Comcast either. But, okay. So... I'll say that out loud and then they shut me down. Okay, so my how to plan a wedding. So I'm going to go through these 25 steps. I know you're thinking, oh my gosh, we'll never get out of here. But I'm just going to whiz through. And this is how I do it, right? This is my flow. So, you know, comment however you, you know, if you choose to comment in the chat room. But this is my flow, okay? So this is after the contract has said, Debbie, we love you. We can't live without you when it comes to our planning, and the contract is signed. So that's actually step number one, contract signed. So you should have a contract ready to go, a boilerplate contract that really is just easy for you to fill in. And hey, if you meet with your clients, right, and they decide to book you on site on, you know, at that meeting, which is, doesn't happen often, but it could well happen for you, right? So if they book you on site, you can have them sign, I always mess up on the terminology. It's a letter of intent, that's the term, where it says, we want to hire, you know, Bianca or Nancy or Precious or Michelle or whomever. We want you to plan our wedding. This is the date, whatever information you have, and we want to leave. We're paying this deposit in good faith. And they sign that. They give you the deposit, the check, or you take their credit card information, you know, process the credit card if you've got your swipe thingy-majigger or however you do that, virtual terminal. And then you can draft a more formal agreement, and which is the letter of agreement, and then have them sign that. So you could do it that way. Or maybe your contract is so, you know, in such a way that you can fill it in. But try not to do too much of that filling in stuff on site, because inevitably you'll forget something, you know. And a contract is a legal document. You don't want someone coming back and say, well, the contract says, you know, da 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 da. So, you know, just try not to do that on site. And a lot of times, you know, I'll just say, you know, a lot of times, most of the time, always, I say, okay, this is great. I'm going to, usually because I get the call or an email, I'm going to draft up the contract and send that over to you. And that's how I do it. And then I can go through and make sure, because, it's very rare that it's a fixed price that I know right off the bat how much the wedding's going to cost. Someone's asking, how much percent deposit is the standard? It depends. It really depends on, how close it is to the wedding, because the more time there is, the more, you know, the easier it is for them to break up the payments. And the important part is, who asked the question? Gia, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. You want to make sure your deposit matches up with, and your payments, maybe I'm not saying the right thing. Your payments should match up with the work that you're doing. So you don't want to take a small deposit and then do half of the work that's required for the wedding if you haven't been paid for half of whatever your fee is. So it really depends. We're in January right now, right? So if someone's getting married in December and they decide they want to hire me now, then the amount that I take from them would be much less than if they hired me in January and they're getting married in March. It's very different. So it really depends. But that deposit needs to be a substantial amount that you feel, you know, like a commitment. It's not supposed to be, you want it to be a measly amount. You can take half, or you can break it up into thirds, or you can break it up into quarters, however you want to do that. But just make sure whatever you do matches up, your work meaning matches up with the amount of money you've collected. So, if it's a $2,000 is my fee, and we've got maybe 3 or 4 months to go, then $1,000 is not unreasonable, you know. But it may be, you know, maybe closer to $600 or $700, depending on what I need to do at that point. But just make sure you make that agreement. You both agree on that ahead of time, what the payments are, and make sure you spell that out in the contract. But that's a whole nother thing. So let me get through the flow of this. But there is some information about contracts on weddings for a living. And if you want more specific information, there is some stuff on Wedding Business Guide. And when I say that, right, it's not as a plug or to force you over there, but because Confetti, let me just say this, because Confetti is such an, it's just an open forum, right? So we can all learn and so forth. And sometimes brides are checking out the show, which is fine. But that's such nitty gritty stuff that I really believe that it belongs on that site, Wedding Business Guide, which goes into all that detail. Because then you kind of go with, you know, you've made that decision, you've gone, you've sort of leaped over to business mode, and that can get a little bit. Not everybody here wants to run a wedding planning business. Let me put it that way. Some people just want to plan weddings and they don't want to run a business. Maybe they're an employee or doing this as a hobby or just doing it for a sister or whatever or a friend, and they don't need to know all that. So that's why I kind of pull away from doing such things. Okay. Whoa, I haven't even started with my list, right? And I said we got 25 things to go through. So contract signed is the first step. Then the next thing I do is send a welcome packet. And the welcome packet includes information about my policies and procedures, which is really important. So they know when you can call. Don't even think about, you know, emailing me at this hour. No, I'm just kidding. But just so we understand one another, it's just sort of like in my way of saying, this is how I work. So they kind of get my understanding, get my vibe. And they've probably already picked up on that during this initial client meeting. But I sent out that welcome packet. There's some little goodies in there, a tip booklet. There's a packet, and I've sent this out before to a few people. There's a planning guide, which is like a bunch of cards, which has a lot of questions that you ask vendors. I'll usually give that to them. So it's a sort of just what it is, a welcome packet just reaffirms that they made the right decision. You know, that this is the right person. I'm glad we hired you. You know, you want someone to feel welcome, not just they sign the contract and let's get into planning mode. That's sort of like the warm and fuzzy feeling part of it. So I send the welcome packet. Then it's the first client meeting. And that welcome packet and the first client meeting could potentially happen at the same time, but not usually. And during that first client meeting, we go over the budget, which we've already touched on before they became a client, because you need to know how much money people are spending before you spend a whole lot of time talking to them. They've got only $2,000 to spend and your minimum fee is $5,000. Nothing to talk about there, right? So we just go over the budget in detail, and I'm asking things like, who's contributing? Do you have money saved up? Are we paying each week? That things like that. And find out what's been done. The vision questionnaire is so that I can get a feel for what they really want. What do they want for their wedding? What do they want? Whimsical? Do they want pink everywhere? Love pink. Or do they want, you know, something that's a little more modern? That kind of stuff. And then my next step, remember, this is my flow. So some things I'm doing with the client, some things I'm just doing for me behind the scenes. Then I create the client file. And usually that client file, it's on paper. Now, I know we're all electronic. Everyone's got their little tablets and their lappy toppies. But I still have a paper file. So if you have figured out how to do this wedding planning thing without any paper, and I know we all want to be greener, right? More earth friendly. So tell me how you're doing that. But I still have a client file in place, because they're going to give you stuff. This is the picture we want. This is the swatch of fabric. This is what we like. We saw this someplace. So I kind of hold all of that in one folder. Then if design is a part of it, because not all my packages are, we do a client design meeting. That's separate. So for me, Debbie, I'm a logistical planner, right? Very anal. And know what's what, because you see how I'm going through this list, right? But if my client needs help, if they really want the design, meaning they're very into the look and they just have a certain vision, sort of Preston Bailey-esque kind of thing, I don't roll that into my package. That's a separate thing. Design is something I charge separately for. So if design is something that they want my help with, we do a separate client design meeting, and that's all we do. And I schedule that, and prior to that meeting, I've got some of the information that they've already shared with me, but then we meet face-to-face and sort of go into detail. That's the meeting where we're looking at fabric, we're looking at colors, doing the design board, things like that. And then following that meeting, then I get into research and brainstorm mode. And that's a really good thing to have your interns or assistants help you with. So they're really doing the legwork. So you get to be lead designer, lead wedding planner, and come up with a vision and, you know, pull colors and just things, you know, come up with the look for your clients to match what they've spoken about. But then you have to go in and research and get the specifics about how much does that stuff cost. I mean, vision and pictures and stuff and fabric swatches are all grand, but you have to associate cost with that. And that's what I do, is to research and brainstorm the design ideas. So I'm looking online, looking at my books, looking at my magazine, inspiration boards, going to venues, if they've already picked out a venue, if they haven't, to sort of see how that matches with the look that they have, taking pictures, shooting video. Thank God for the iPhone and the smartphones, right? We can do all of that without getting a separate camera. But, I mean, you can still do that if you choose to. And then associating costs with that. And then after doing all that, then I create a design proposal, which is really all that pretty stuff, but with a cost associated with it. This is how much it's going to cost. This is how much the centerpieces are going to cost based on, you know, the linens that you want. This is the rent. This is the fee if we're renting them or buying them, or if we're buying a bolt of fabric, all those things, and present that to the client. That's the design. And I'm still not done yet. So are you beginning to see why you've got to charge separately for design? Don't roll all that stuff into planning. It takes a lot of time if you're doing it the right way. Or I'm not saying my way is the only right way, but you know what I mean. Then I may hire an event designer. Just because I've got the proposal and come up with the design and got the associated cost doesn't mean that Debbie's doing that. 9 times out of 10, I'm not doing that. I don't have time to do that. I'm worrying about all the other anal stuff. So I'll hire an event designer. It could be you, but even so, charge for that separately. So that's my next step. Hire an event designer. And if you are hiring someone, then that's got to be included in the cost that you provide to your clients, right? And then once they go along, once they give me the green light, they review and sign the design contract. Remember, this is separate from logistical planning. Unless all you do is design, then the first part of what I just talked about may not, the design meeting may be the meeting. You know, that may be the primary meeting. But if it's something in addition to me planning, then this is all separate and they design. Now, it says if they review and sign the design contract. The next step is, it says if you're designing, and put a note here to share with you, if you're designing, add tasks to the master timeline. So if you are also designing, that master timeline, you know, your to-do list, you've got to start filling in what you've got to do. You know, go to the rental company, pick up linens, all those things you have to do. You know what I mean? So this is why I'm an advocate of charging separately for design, not doing it together. I know a lot of us are really passionate about the design and creativity of weddings, which is why a lot of us get into this. But don't be fooled that that's an easy task. And it's, you know, don't get wrapped up in the love that is the creativity. It's still a business and you should charge for that and keep it separate so that they can understand and appreciate it. Because what will happen is maybe you'll come up with all this design stuff and they'll decide to go do it themselves, or they think they can do it for cheaper. That's fine. But you've got to keep it real and show them exactly what's involved. And maybe they can replicate the centerpieces themselves and all the rest of that. But do you see why you have to make sure you're getting paid for your time? Who wants to do all of that work and then turn around and say, oh, that's okay, we'll do it ourselves? Not happening. Okay, so that's the design part. Then, and granted, all this stuff may not be happening step by step by step. There'll be other things going on, but I just wanted to show you how my chart is set up. Then I begin to research vendors. And this is based on what the client says they need. Because remember, we're asking what they've done so far. And I'm going through sample contracts because hopefully you've already interviewed a lot of your local vendors and stuff. This is really not the time for you to start your hunt for vendors. Granted, you may not have all of them that your client needs, but hopefully you don't want to, this is why you don't want to wait until you have clients to start looking for vendors. You should already have some in your back pocket, because once you find a good vendor, that person, he or she, can refer you to others. So, you know, you can say, I've got a wedding coming up, to the DJ you just met. Do you know of a great florist? And then he or she can point you in the right direction. Easy to do, right? Much easier to do. So, sorry, I'm going to move these, my earphones here. So it's good to have, when you meet these vendors, I usually get sample contracts so I can familiarize myself, and I'll familiarize my client and say, you know, this is an idea of what, you know, the contract from the DJ might look like. And then in my research, I'm doing site inspections, because sometimes I have to remind myself of what a place looks like. So I'll go back in and just check it out. And when you do check those places out, again, get sample contracts. I just noticed that Donchell is saying, don't do any work without a deposit retainer. You'll get burned. Believe me. Yeah, I think we've all experienced that to some degree. Yeah, I know I've been there. Get burned, hopefully just the one time, and you don't do it again. I think we all, it's sort of like growing up and your mom, your dad says, don't do such and such, and we still do it. You have to learn. So yeah, get a deposit for sure. Okay, so once I research the vendors, and again, this is all based on that initial client meeting where I kind of got their vision and everything, and what have they done so far, then I try to narrow down, if I can, 3 vendors per category. So remember, I'm doing all that legwork. You don't want to overwhelm your client with 5 cake places or, you know, 4 photographers. You've got to narrow it down. And maybe there's only one photographer that you know of, or that you think is ideal. And that might be the hit, that might be the connection right there. Because remember, you've already done the legwork, you've already done the interviews and decided, you know, this is a vendor I could potentially work with. You know what their cost associated with that vendor is, so you can match it up with your client's budget. So I try to narrow it down to no more than 3 per category. Again, it may just be 1 per category, but it's good to have more than one. You don't want to make it seem like you're pushing your clients in one direction. Okay, so then once I narrow down the vendors in each category, then I schedule vendor meetings. Now, this is the meetings for the clients to meet with the vendors. So either the vendors may come to us, or we'll go to them. And you should determine in your contract how many vendor meetings you're going to do, right? So your contract should say up to 3 vendor meetings per category. Kind of a lot right there, but you don't have to go to your clients' vendor meetings. You don't have to accompany them on each vendor meeting. You can send them along, but what you should on their own. But what you should do, or at least this is what I do, I prep my clients before each meeting. So if I know they're meeting with the caterer, let's say today's Tuesday, not let's say today is Tuesday, and we've got a meeting with the caterer on Friday, then I want to prep them. I want to prep my clients and talk to them about the caterer we're going to see, and just usually what happens, what to expect at the tasting, and, you know, any terminology and things that are standard. Now, your clients may be well-versed, and you'll know, but what you're doing is just giving them a heads up so that they know what kind of things to expect and how to ask good questions. Because remember, if you're going with them, your time is valuable. You don't want to sit there and have your caterer educate your client about the basics when you could do that. And it doesn't mean that you have to sit there and have that meeting with your clients. You can have a tip sheet. You can have a tip sheet for each kind of vendor. So that goes, you know, the tip sheet could include good questions to ask, some, you know, vocab words. I've got them channeling my primary school, my elementary school days. So you can, you know, things like, you know, what French service is, or what Russian service is, things like that. So, you know, it can be something you print. And the best part is, if you've already created this tip sheet once, you give it to your same clients each time. Just make sure anything you hand to your clients follows your brand. So, you know, your logo on the top, if you always use a certain kind of font, be consistent with that. Make sure your phone number and website and all that stuff is at the bottom. Yeah, they're your clients, so they already have that information, but you never know where that tip sheet is going to land. So that's why I say include all, make sure that's on everything that you hand to your client. You want, and it keeps your name out there. It brands who you are. So when they leave it sitting around, or when they pass it on to their sister who's getting married, your information is there. So you just, I think it's a good idea to prep your clients. That's what I do. Okay. And then what did I write on here? Oh, and then debrief after. So after the vendor meeting, we'll do a quick debrief, and it might happen right outside of the vent, right immediately after, you know, outside of the vendor's office or wherever, and say, you know, how did that go? What did you think? Did you like that? What did you, you know, is this something you think you want to move forward with? And they may tell you, oh my gosh, yeah, we love caterer. The second caterer we went to, I think that's who we want to move forward with. This is what your clients are paying you for. So don't, you know, hold their hand. just make sure you charge for holding their hand. This is why we have to charge appropriately for our services. So don't just throw them out there. Prep them and give them enough information. And then always you, wedding planner, thank the vendor. You know, if you've got taken the time to order stationery and business cards, show off with those. Send a note. Thank you so much. We really enjoyed meeting you, whether or not your clients will go with that vendor. So if you've got five vendor meetings, send out five thank you letters. This is how you stand out and positions you as a pro. At least that's what I do. And then your clients select the vendors. That's the next step. The client then narrows it down as to who they want to go with, right? Then your vendor, usually for me anyway, my clients sign a contract. Clients sign the vendor contract with the vendor, right? It's not me. The vendor's not paying. I'm not paying the vendor and collecting the money from the client. The agreement is between the client and the vendor in my case when I plan weddings. But what I do is I review that contract. Now, I'm not an attorney. Don't play one on TV. Don't pretend to be one. But if you have taken the time to interview a vendor and you already have a sample contract, that's going to make your life so much easier because you're halfway there. You already know what that contract is going to look like. So your eye knows where to zone in and which part of the contract to look for. And, you know, you're looking for things like dates, specific times, what they're providing. And if something is on the contract that was discussed, but it's not in writing, you, Mr. and Miss Wedding Planner, make sure it's in that contract. You don't want to hear that. Oh, no, we'll be there for sure. Oh, that's understood for sure. No. You get that in writing. So you push, you get your vendors. If they've got to revise it, they've got to revise it. That's what your clients are paying you for. Again, you're not an attorney, so you're not pretending, you know, unless you are, if you happen to be, fantastic. But that's not what you're there to do. You just want to review that contract. And in my policy and procedures form, remember that form I talked about that's in my welcome kit? I let my clients know, I'm here to provide you with suggestions, but ultimately you get to decide. So the decision is yours. And that's kind of like my, you know, CYA, you know, that's on you. But, you know, not really like that, but just make them sign that contract. You don't get involved with that. Don't take payments and then you pay the vendor unless you're offering that style of service where your offerings are like an all-inclusive service and, you know, your vendors are paying, you pay the vendors and your clients pay you. But in the traditional sense, usually your clients are paying the vendors. And then when you get to review the contracts and clients sign it, you've then got to look at that contract and make sure you see when deposits are due, when payments are due, because you're now going to add those dates onto your timeline, you, the wedding planner, so that you can remind your clients 5 days before, okay, in the next 5 days, we've got to pay the second deposit to the caterer. That's what you've got to do. You've got to remind them, okay? At least that's what I do. And then, we're not quite done, I then go through each contract as I get it. I transfer the information from my vendor's contracts onto my master timeline. So that, excuse me, production day timeline. The production day timeline is the timeline that specifies what happens when on the wedding day. So, you know, at 3 o'clock we're doing this. At 3:03 we're doing this. At 3:05 we're doing this. So I transfer the information from the contract. So if I'm looking at the cake maker's contract and it says they will deliver the cake at the reception site at 2 p.m., then I go over to my master production timeline, which is still in its draft format, and I enter 2 p.m., cake arrives at facility. Do you see what I mean? So if you do that with each contract, then it's going to be a whole lot easier as opposed to waiting until 2 days or a week before the wedding day to try to put the production schedule together. If you just start adding that stuff in as you get it, that's going to make your life so much easier. Ask me how I know that. So transfer that information onto your production day timeline. That's what I do. And then the next step really isn't a step on its own. It's my ongoing wedding planning duties. So, you know, tastings, guest list management, if I'm providing that service, you know, worksheets for day of, all those things. And I have my own timeline that I follow. So I know what to do when. Do you see why we've got to charge people the right fees for what we do? It's no small task. It's no small task, especially if it's full service planning, which is really what I'm going through right now. Okay. And then I'm working on my wedding day production schedule, although really I've already started that a few steps back. Because remember, I said I add the information from the contracts onto my wedding day production schedule. So again, production day schedule is that wedding day timeline. Kind of use different words there. Then then I'm sending this to my vendors, usually a few weeks, about a week or so before the wedding. That's not true. Usually I'm so anal, it's about a good 2 weeks before the wedding. It's sort of like my draft production day schedule. And it's sort of set, it's basically, you know, this is what I'm working on. This is what's going on for the wedding day. Does this timeline seem, does that match with you? Are we on the same page? And they'll say, you know, they can look at, more times than not, it's about right. But they may say, you know what, 2 p.m. is not when we're delivering the cake. We're going to be there actually at 2:30. Oh, okay. Change production day, change my timeline. You may want to change the contract. But, you know, that's sort of like a small detail. That's maybe going a little overkill. But you'll know. And hopefully your vendors that you're working with are vendors that you work with on a repeated basis, right? On a recurring basis, that's a better word. So send that to the vendors, get them to okay that. And the reason I do it 2 weeks out is because the vendors don't always respond right away. A lot of them are going to be so taken back that you're doing all of this. Because I'm telling you, a lot of wedding planners out there don't go into that detail, you know? So this is why I have this system. There's no way I can remember all of this. Then I schedule my pre-wedding vendor meetings. So after they've seen the draft of that timeline so I can tweak it and so forth, then I actually go through the process of meeting the vendors. And this is just the follow-up. This is usually about a week before or the week of the wedding. And I used to do this individually, you know, meet with a photographer, meet with the caterer, and sometimes we do it over the phone. But what I've done now, what works for me is I get the venue, usually the reception site, to agree to an evening or late afternoon, and then it's sort of like an open house. So all the vendors who are involved on my client's wedding day can drop in at that point, and we can just go over stuff. So I don't have to, I have all my stuff there. I got the production timeline, and we can just go over everything. So maybe the caterer stops by at 2, and we just sort of look over the space together. Maybe the photographer stops by at the same time, or maybe the photographer might come later or earlier. So it's sort of like a sliding appointment, because asking everyone to be at the pre-wedding vendor meeting at 3 p.m. hardly ever happens. So most of the vendors, in my world anyway, will come at different times. But they can usually agree to be there on a certain day. And if not, then you have the one or two stragglers that can't, then you have them meet you individually. But don't kill yourself trying to meet with 6 or 7, 8, you know, depending on how many vendors, you can have a long list of vendor meetings. Will drive yourself crazy. So try to set that up as one meeting. Someone saying your chat role has a long delay. I'm sorry. I don't know. That may be Nancy, dear. Nancy, are you with Comcast? Because that may well be stop doing that. So I don't know. I hope that's it's your Comcast. Yeah, I'm sorry, but it'll it's all there. It's if there's a delay, I'm sorry, but it's all gonna come out in the wash, but it's gonna show up. I'm sorry it's delayed. So yeah, if you can get everybody to meet together, that's a really good thing. Yeah, Nancy's saying you like having an open house with all the brides and grooms vendors at one place. Yeah, it's just makes life easier, you know. And then for those that can't, you know, you do the one-on-ones, maybe you do a Skype meeting, but usually it's good to get them to come to the venue. They need, and for some vendors, they may not have ever been there. You know, locally, there's a good chance that if they've been doing weddings, they've been there. But some vendors may not have been there. So this is a good chance for you to show them around. They can see where all the electrical outlets, they can see if there's a loading dock, they can see where the bathrooms are, they can see, you know, all those bits and pieces that are so hard to visualize until you're there. So if you can try to get everyone there, and maybe it's like the weekend before, if there's not an event going on, or Sunday afternoon, but just talk to the venue and they'll usually arrange that. I've never had an issue with doing that yet. Okay, coming down to the home stretch. Then after the pre-wedding vendor meetings, stock up on the emergency kit. So that's really, that's when I do that. Now, I usually have a running, I mean, I try to keep it stocked up. Usually right after the wedding, I'm lying. Big lie, Debbie. I was going to say, after each wedding, I stock up my emergency kit. No, I don't. So it's usually leading up to that wedding, but that's a really good job for your interns or your children to stock up on the emergency kit. The key is that you have an inventory list of what should be in there and be specific, you know, how many pairs of black socks do you want in there? If you've got five groomsmen, then maybe you want to have at least three pairs of black socks, because inevitably somebody will show up with white tube socks. Don't know what's going on there. Maybe it's just the caliber of clients that I have. But yeah, so you just make sure you keep list your inventory list of what should be in the emergency kit. But that's a good time to stock up. Coming up, this is coming down to like the wedding week or so. Then it's time for the wedding day rehearsal. Wedding rehearsal. So that's usually the day before, and you actually have to plan that. You know, I'm so anal, I have a pre-meeting for my staff about the wedding day, the rehearsal. But usually after we've done a few rehearsals, they kind of get the gist. But just to give them a little bit of background, you know, if there's a troublemaker maid of honor who really wants to be a wedding planner and wants to tell us what to do, I try to give them fair warning about that. Or if I know my conversation with the person that's been that's coordinating, you know, a lot of houses of worship have the person that's responsible for coordinating the wedding. And then it's sort of a battle of egos because she doesn't want to give up authority when you, the professional wedding planner, comes in. Been there, done that. So just kind of giving them the heads up. Hey, by the way, you know that, and I've said this before, don't wait until the day of the wedding rehearsal to introduce yourself to that person. If you know that this person exists, you reach out to them at least a week beforehand, if you can, just to say, hi, you know, I'm just the planner or the consultant for the, you know, the Jones Burroughs wedding. And I just wanted to, you know, just make sure, you know, if we can just talk, or can I, if you got a rehearsal coming up, if I can just sort of view that, just to kind of soften it. And it's not always a bad experience, but I have found that many times there's a bit of a struggle there. It's a sort of a power struggle. So I kind of have to sit my behind down and just let this person control the rehearsal, praying that they really know what to do. So wedding rehearsal, and then after the wedding rehearsal, then I have my huddle with staff. Maybe I'll change that H to a C. Oops, excuse me. Cuddle with staff, but huddle with staff. And this is for us to go over our countdown for the wedding day. So it's kind of like what we did before the wedding day rehearsal, but this is we're going into the details. You know, who needs to be where, and just make sure we all know what's what. This can be done on the conference call. This can be done via Skype. Skype is fantastic, or in person, because maybe not all of your assistants will be there at the wedding rehearsal. And then the next step is the big day and the big circle around that. And I just follow my master timeline, my production day schedule for that. So that's, you know, the big day, depending on how many hours your clients have hired you for. And then we're almost done the follow-up. And the follow-up is with my vendors, follow-up with the clients, and follow-up with my staff. It's sort of like a debrief. And the sooner you can do this, the better. While the wedding is still fresh in everyone's mind, we kind of go over what worked, you know, who really wasn't pulling their weight, who did an outstanding job, and have this discussion with vendors, you know. And if a vendor didn't do what they said they were going to do, try to soften that blow. I always try to come with the good before I come with the bad, you know, and you just be careful, be mindful of your tone, you know, because it's very easy. And I've been, you know, ask me how I know this, to sound like, you know, you're telling someone off, and we cannot do that. If they were just, you know, if it was just a blatantly awful experience, then you got to deal with that. But for the most part, I found it's a balance. Not everything was terrible, but usually this was great, but this wasn't so great. Or if they had, you know, if they had someone on their team, like if it was a caterer, maybe one of the wait staff wasn't very pleasant, or really wasn't doing what they were supposed to do, or the bartender for the wedding reception put a tip jar on the counter. You know, you've got to make sure you call them out on that. But always try to come with the good first, and then sort of say, by the way, you know, this. I noticed that there was a tip jar on the counter. It was, and that really doesn't make sense. I really wouldn't want that to happen again for another one of my clients' meetings. That kind of thing. And still send a thank you note. Be the bigger person. Be gracious. Be gracious. Even though your instinct may be to sort of just be really angry, you still want to defend your client. Don't get me wrong. But just remember, the wedding industry community is usually very close and tight-knit, and you don't want to come off as someone who's just a bossy boots or just totally obnoxious. So I know I can go to 0 and 100 with my, you know, my temper can just like that. And I've learned now, and I'm still learning, to sort of just calm down. You know, have you ever sent off an email in anger and then real and read it like at the end of the day or the next day? You just kind of like, it's kind of embarrassing. So the same thing when you're talking to vendors, just check your tone, you know, and make sure that you're not trying to sound like the bossy boots wedding planner. And then again, as I mentioned, talk to your staff, but also debrief with your clients that may have gone on their honeymoon. Just give them a quick call, or what's better, what you really should do is just send them a survey, but don't overwhelm them with 20 questions, you know, a few questions. And if you go on Wedding Business Guide, you can search for the word survey, and there's some examples of what you should send. Again, put this on your company letterhead if it's paper. If you're using something like SurveyMonkey and there's a chance to brand that, then brand it with your logo, whatever, and just give them a chance to respond. And also leave space for some glowing testimonials, because that's the information that you're going to use to promote your business the next time around. So let your staff know that your clients evaluate you. Let your staff know that vendors are evaluating you, your staff, and ask your vendors how did your team perform? Get their feedback about that, because we can't be everywhere at once, and maybe what we're seeing someone else is not seeing. In fact, I know that your other people are seeing what you cannot as the owner of your wedding business. So make sure you get that information. But you know, take it, is it with a pinch of salt or a grain of salt? I always get that wrong. But just, you know your staff, and, you know, you'll get to know who works well in what area, who works really well in dealing with vendors who are not keeping time, and who on your staff works really well with older guests and things like that, and who works well with guests who want to talk to you any kind of a way and know how to handle that without being too brutal. So take all that information and then file that in your client's file. Keep that with their information so it's all together. And then I rinse and repeat. You know? So those are my steps. Those are my steps. And that's what I go through. And again, it's not really fancy. I guess mine's on this sheet. I just sort of, it's like a flow chart. But that's, I know that's my system. And that's what works for me. Whatever works for you, I encourage you to try to document that, okay? If you can. Not if you can, forget that, if you can. Document what it is that you're doing. Document so you can see where to go, because it's just, things get busy. You've got life, you've got work, you've got family, you've got things going on. So if you know, okay, I've done the design meeting, next thing is I've got to create this proposal, and then you can keep working. Always know what the next step is, okay? All right, let's look at the chat room. Ooh, I can see someone who's a coordinator. Guest 325 says, I'm of the coordinators that work for the church, maybe one of the coordinators for the church, and is totally responsible to be sure nothing is broken, moved, damaged, or stolen. So it is hard to trust someone you have not met, but the bride hired. Regardless, I'm paid, but I hate to see a bride's wedding ruined by a non-professional, but I have taken a back seat and let it happen. Ooh, yeah. So are you the person, are you saying... you're the person that's at the church that you work, you are a coordinator, guest 325, whoever you are. I'm sorry, I can't address you by name, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And I kind of alluded this to our last show. It's because this industry is relatively easy to get to. There are a lot of people that come in and as wedding planners and sort of give us a bad rap. So you have to understand when someone does not greet us with warm, open arms, you know? So again, but the reason I brought up about the coordinators is that at the church or house of worship, usually there is a struggle. But in my defense, the coordinator of the church doesn't always know what's supposed to happen at a wedding. Yes, they know how they're very well versed, as they should be, in protecting that property, what can and cannot happen. But sometimes they don't really know what's supposed to happen. They don't know who's supposed to go up the aisle first. They don't know the details of wedding etiquette. That's been my experience. And when I try to share that knowledge without trying to sound like a know-it-all, I usually get pushback. So this is why I suggest trying to meet with this person ahead of time if you can. It kind of softens the blow. They get a chance to meet you. They know that I'm not trying to overtake the process. They know that I'm there to respect that facility and that venue, and I want us to work together. But wedding etiquette, a lot of times, again, I said that again, I'm using extreme. Sometimes that person does not know. They know, again, what's what with their venue, but they don't always know what is supposed to happen. And by the way, By the way, when you remember, I said that I prep my clients before the vendor meeting. I prep myself too. So I will go back and double check that I've got all my, I'm not saying that we need to know everything off the top of our heads about weddings, but we do need to know where to go to get that information and the resource. And before a ceremony, you may have to brush up on that. You may need to find out, you know, remind yourself what happens when, who goes down the aisle, in what order, and especially if it's a wedding or a denomination that you're not 100% familiar with. So, you know, you brush up. And your clients will come to you and you know where to go for your resources, and then you share that information with them. Be a sharer of information with weddings, please, because it's going to promote you and propel you as an expert. Don't keep all that stuff inside. Blog about it, write about it, video, audio, whatever. Share that information with your clients so that they know what to do. And then you as the wedding, just because you share doesn't mean someone's not going to hire you. It doesn't mean that at all. A lot of times they don't want to be bothered with all that stuff. So they just want to know that you know what's going on. What else did I miss? Guys, I'm looking here. Guest 218. I know who that is because you wrote me earlier. Is asking a question. Hi, Debbie. Why do you use more bartenders for cocktail hour than for the reception? Oh, Chanel Weddings. Thank you. Good question. Really, because and did I say bartenders or did I say wait staff? Because if I said bartenders, I thought I said wait staff, but if I said bartenders, I probably meant wait staff. But usually for cocktail hour, if there is a bar, if folks are not sitting down, they're not doing anything other than focusing on the drinks portion. But what I meant, and if I said bartenders, I apologize, wait staff, there needs to be enough people to pass. If it's past hors d'oeuvres, there needs to be enough people on hand because people are sort of standing around and it's not as structured as the wedding reception where everyone's seated or has a seat assignment and has other things going on. With the cocktail hour, it's just a short amount of time and a lot of people. So you don't want people, you know, there shouldn't be long, long lines. So that's why you need more people at that portion of the event. I said bartenders, okay. So, but again, it's just that same principle. It's that there are just a lot more people in a shorter space of time, and cocktail hour, if the drinks are not being passed, people are being passed and people are going to the bar, there's just more of them and there needs to be enough people, enough staff to attend to them. Otherwise, they'll be there. Have you ever been at a bar? I'm sure you have, where it just takes forever to get a drink. It's like, forget that already. It shouldn't be like that at the wedding. So you want to make sure there are enough people on hand to take care of that. I hope that answers your question, guest 218. So that's Chanel. Chanel Wedding, so I'm guessing your name is Chanel. Okay. Guest 325 is Miss Sonia, Weddings and Events, Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Welcome. Welcome. Let's see. Oh, Heather. Hi, Heather from At the Heels is saying, Heather, you must be continuing something. Oh, she's talking about filling out a W-9. You must be talking about hiring event staff. That's what that's about, if usually. I think that's what you're talking about. Since I mentioned it. So 1099 here in the United States is the form that you receive or give depending on your position. So if I am hiring you as an independent contractor, meaning you're not an employee, right, to work on my wedding, to work weddings for me, at the end of the year, I furnish a document that lets the IRS know how much money I paid you. And that goes on a 1099. And the reason is that good old Uncle Sam doesn't want to miss out on any taxes that they can collect from you. So just the fact that I'm paying you a straight fee doesn't mean that you don't have to pay taxes on that, because that gets reported to the IRS and the form is a 1099. So I'm jumping in on that conversation. But if you're hiring folks to work for you, you do need to have that in place. Heather is saying it's easier than paying payroll tax when you're just starting out. That's true. Just be careful because the IRS, although it's still a little shaky, a little gray as to what an employee is and who is an employee and who is an independent contractor. Traditionally, an employee is someone you tell specifically how to do their job, which is kind of what we're doing. And an independent contractor, and I'm oversimplifying this, is someone that you uses their own tools, uses their own wherewithal to get the job done. And in a sense, that's what we're doing when you're hiring an event assistant or event manager or a wedding manager, or however you want to call this person, to help on the day of. Usually that's when you're hiring that person, getting that person involved. But just be careful and check with your tax person, your accountant, as to what the qualifications are. But you'll probably be okay. I don't think anyone's coming down too hard on us wedding planners. I'm saying now, and then we'll all be busted. No, but just be mindful of the difference between an independent contractor and an employee. But Heather's absolutely right. If someone is an employee, then you do have to pay payroll taxes and all the rest of that. But independent contractor, that person is then responsible for paying their own taxes. Okay, you just need to furnish your part as the person hiring them is to furnish the IRS that information. And they get, you know, if you do your taxes at the end of the year, you'll see the 1099 for any income that needs to be taxed, that could potentially be taxable. Okay. Well, that's really what I wanted to share with you tonight. I hope it was helpful for you. But, you know, however you do what you do with weddings, even if you are still in the stage, at the stage where this is just something you enjoy and it's a passion and it's not something that you're being compensated for, come up with a system. You know, I do this, then I do this, then I do this, then I do this. It's going to make your life so much easier, and you're less likely to forget stuff. And even though I went through the 25 steps here, a lot of these steps still have individual lists underneath them. So I still need to go under, like, you know, I said schedule vendor meetings, then I've got, you know, how many, prep clients before, debrief after, thank vendor. That's all under that one step. So that's part of what we do. Wedding planning is no joke. I mean, it takes a good 100 hours plus to plan a wedding. So be sure you're being compensated appropriately for your time. And when you break it down like this, then you begin to see why, you know, you can't charge $500 to plan a wedding. That's just too much time involved. If you're just doing a part of it, then maybe so. Maybe so, but you know, can you tell I'm not convinced about that? Just charge what you're worth and take the time. And as you're doing these tasks, you know, check your time and see how long it's taking you to do certain things. How long does it take you to do the wedding rehearsal? How long is it taking you to do your client meetings? Is it really an hour or is it more like 2.5 hours? How can you cut down on the time? And a lot of times with these meetings, the way to cut down, honest to God, the simplest thing is to be prepared and have an agenda. I don't have any client meeting without an agenda. This is what we're going to talk about. This, 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 and this. And that's what that meeting's for. Otherwise, you'll be there forever. Okay? All right. That's about it. Hey, did I talk about Audible this week? I mentioned it the week before. Since we're all listening to the show, right? I mentioned I love to read. I don't have time to read anymore. So you can go on, you can get an audio book and just let you know, have someone read it to you. It's just like being a kid all over again. Have someone read to you. Read, you know, you listen to a book, technically read a book while you're driving, while you're working out, while you're, you know, around that, doing stuff around the house or sitting in your office and just have the audio play. So Audible.com, which is an Amazon company, has audiobooks. But if you go, use the link. There are two links. It's audible.com/confetti. Or confettiradio.com/audible. Both take you to the same place. And you get a full 30 days to try out the service for free. But the best part is you get a credit, which allows you to download one complete book of your choice. And it's absolutely free. So even if you decide not to stick with Audible after the 30-day trial, that book is yours to keep. Remember, this is an audio book. So I didn't find too many wedding planning books there. But there were some great business books. And I said I was going to tell you, I had a list of a few of my favorites. So I'm going to have to do that. But, you know, check out some of the business section, or sometimes it's just inspirational books. Because sometimes you listen to what someone's journey was and how they got there, and you can pick out pieces of that or maybe apply more than pieces, maybe the whole thing, to what works for you. So, you know, don't just get stuck in wedding stuff. Weddings is what we do. There are a lot of industries out there where we can, for lack of a better word, steal their ideas and principles and systems and apply them to yours, you know, and make it work for you. Okay. I will put the link in the chat. The link is Audible. Maybe I'm going to put the HTTP so it's clickable, right? audible.com/confetti. And that's the link to try and get the free audiobook. Okay, let me know what you're reading. I'd love to hear more. Okay. Someone's asking, Oh, about the plan for the phone service? Freedom Voice. So try freedomvoice.com. I saw the $10 for 300 minutes. Do you have two phone numbers or just the one service? I have one service with two numbers, a local number and a toll-free number. But yeah, $10 a month for 300 minutes is more than enough, I think, unless you're doing buku stuff with your wedding business already. Then kudos to you. But even if it's not your wedding business, you can use it for something else. So go to try, I'll put that in there, tryfreedomvoice.com. And what that is if you, it allows you, it gives you a phone number, whether it's the toll-free number you want or a local number. And when someone calls that number, it's what it's doing behind the scenes is it's forwarding the call to wherever you want it to go, whether it's your cell phone, whether it's your home landline. Am I the only person that still has one of those? Or, you know, your office number, if you're the only person taking calls, it can forward to as many numbers as you want. And while that's happening, the caller is hearing either your greeting or your hold music, whatever you want them to hear. And then when you get the call, you, the person, the owner of the system, the wedding planner, the business owner, you get a recording. When you answer the phone, it'll say you have a call from Freedom Voice, and then you press any key to accept, and you then either press any key to accept or let the call go into voicemail. Either way, your call is just hearing hold music until you pick up. And what that means is A, you sound very professional. B, you can have other people help you answer your telephone. So if it's during a time period when you're not available, you can have an assistant or whomever answer the phone for you. And just like you, they will know when they're getting the business call, if they want to accept it or not. But C, what it means is that you don't have to post your cell number, your personal cell number, all over the place. You just use this Freedom Voice number. So that no matter how many times you change your phone number, or if you decide you don't, you know, you want to forward the call to someplace else, that number remains constant. That number for your business always is always in the same place. So you can still use your cell phone number, as many of us do, to manage our business, but you don't have to put your cell phone number everywhere. Otherwise, people are going to call you all times. But with Freedom Voice, you get to determine when the calls come in, do not disturb, and things like that. Freedom Voice has voicemail or the voicemail from your phone. Oh, that's a beautiful thing too. So if you get a call and you decide, you know, you're in the middle of a meeting or you're in a real noisy place and you don't want to take the call, it goes to the Freedom Voice voicemail. It's not going to go to your cell phone. If you decide to reject the call, it goes to the Freedom Voice message. So there's no, it's not going to your Sprint Voice or press one, you know, it's going to the greeting that you've recorded for the system. So it's really, really great. And I've also used it for an RSVP service. So it's really helpful. I put the phone number and the extension in the invitation, and then the guests responded to the toll-free number. They dialed the extension, and then they got a special greeting. You've reached, this is the RSVP line for Michelle and Sam. This is what we need you to do. Please say your name after the beep. Beep, say their name. Please let us know how many of you will be attending after the beep. Beep, then they say that number. Please let us know, would you prefer the salmon, the beef, or the chicken for your reception dinner? Beep, and then they do that. And then what you get, the person, the owner of that system, you just get a replay. You know, Sam and your name, you know, Annie, whomever, two guests, beef, chicken, or whatever. So you get the playback. So it's you can do a lot of different things with it. And yeah, there are lots of other services. Nancy's saying she uses Google Voice. Yeah. So Google Voice works too. Google Voice works too. I'm not saying that there aren't any other services, but I've used Freedom Voice since 2001. And it really is a great service. And when you call them with questions, guess what? A real person answers the phone. So they're a real company. They're based out in California, and someone can help you. And they can make you help you with setting up. If you want an extension to go automatically somewhere else, they can work on that for you. So a lot of different things you can do. So I'll post the link again. It's tryfreedomvoice.com. Give that a go. Let me know how that works out for you. Did I type it right? It looks weird. Oh, I put a B in there? Okay. Can't spell. But I'll do that one more time. Okay? All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. I'm going to wrap things up. Be sure to join me for our next live show, which is on Tuesday, January 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Can you believe the month is almost over? for the, you know, our first month of the year. What are we doing for our business? I hope we're, you know, moving and shaking, getting things going. Take action. Do something. It may not be the right thing and it may not have the results that you want, but do something. Don't sit there and talk about what you're going to do or tell people what you're going to do. Just do it. Get started. Take baby steps. Before you know it, you'll have, you know, moved on to the next part. So just do something. Do something. Do something for your wedding business. Please join us on the Confetti Insiders Facebook group. Just go on to Bianca. I know you're the queen of that. It's facebook.com/group/confetti insiders. I think is the link for that. And just we do a little bit of talking there, and there are some show topics that I'm working on. I'd love to get your feedback and input. Nancy, thank you so much for sharing that link. I don't know if anybody here on the East Coast saw the 2020 special about weddings. Nancy shared that in the Confetti Insiders group. I haven't had a chance to watch it live, but there's a link there if you want to replay that, watch the replay. And Precious posted the link. Thank you so much. Okay, I can't thank, I don't want to miss anyone, but thank you so much. And please post your comments. The show will be listed on confettiradio.com/332. I think. Yes. confettiradio.com/332. Okay. Thanks so much. I wish you lots of love and success, and I hope to see you and talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Confetti, a wedding planning business talk show.